Greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Weinihau. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Guten Tag. Bonjour. Salam. Shalom. Peace on earth to all living beings. Goodwill to all life. From the entertainment capital of the McNugget Pharmaceutical Cheese-Covered Industrial Complex, this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, the planet's first and only commercial vegan radio show, coming to you on Christmas Sunday. And I've been hearing from a lot of people who were disappointed by Santa Claus this year, even though they say they were not naughty, they say they were nice, but alas, as we might expect, Santa's health conditions caused by his meat eating finally caught up with him this year, and he now finds himself in intensive care following his obesity and high cholesterol-connected diabetes and arthritis-oriented Celebrex, Aleve, and Baycol-associated heart attacks, stroke, and prostate cancer, complicated by mad deer, or CWD, like mad cow, a chronic wasting disease, contracted by the consumption of tainted reindeer meat. So we wish Santa a heartfelt recovery, whose prescription is to go vegan. As the work of Dr. Dean Ornish has taught us, that heart disease is reversible. So go vegan, Santa. You'll be able to be back on the job next Christmas, and you will fit down those chimneys a lot better. And don't forget to stuff everyone's stocking, Santa, with that new the new game for PCs and Macs, Steer Madness, from VeggieGames.com, where the animals get their revenge. Yeah, next year I expect Santa to be a vegan, animal rights advocate. Instead of ho, 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 perhaps Santa will be saying H2O, H2O, H2O. Santa will say, well, now he'll know that as a vegan, Santa will only need 10,000 gallons of water to grow his food next year, compared to the 320,000 gallons he has required in the past year after year after year. So Santa, it will be a lot lighter next year. Well, he'll be 1/32nd of his old wasteful self when it comes to water consumption. And how can it be a merry world anyway without the water to, you know, freeze into snowflakes, you know? Because 'tis the season, Sontag. Tis the season that I guess I have to come to rehearsal more often. I guess we have to have a rehearsal. Anyway, Santa asked me to send you his personal greeting card saying he knows that you weren't naughty. You've been nice. So he looks forward to coming down your chimney next year with Steer Madness, that game. And the card that he wanted me to extend to you personally signed by, oh, wait a second, that's Donald Rumsfeld's signature? Santa, you picked up the wrong stamp signature. I mean, you forgot to sign these for the Go Vegan audience. So Santa wanted me to apologize for his absence this year, and he promises to be back next year, veggier than ever, although he did express some concerns over the new missile defense system. Peace on Earth, huh? We think, the thought maybe one day a year, a wish in the midst of a time of declared war without end. Can't the world declare one day of peace and nonviolence? One day where we have no violence on our plates, no bombs, no hunter's rifle, end the war in Iraq, end the war on animals. And look what wars they are. Look at the millions of animals killed, from prairie dogs to coyotes, to protect all the so-called livestock animals. 10 billion of them, 10,000 million of them, killed this year. 10,000 million animals were beheaded this year, one by one, for you to eat and to be sickened. And then there are the millions of animals tortured in research labs to try to find the cures for your meat-eating diseases. Heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, arthritis. And, you know, what do you get from such bogus research? Oh, you get Baycol and Aleve and Celebrex and, well, are you having a great holiday season? Celebrex, Celebrex, dance to the music. Celebrex, Celebrex, dance to the music.
To the music.
Yeah, great marketing that we get from the deadly drug-pushing pharmaceutical companies. Happy celebratory names for drugs, happy songs from our childhood turned into jingles for the drugs. You know, when Celebrex first came out, I felt I don't even know what the disease is, but even if I don't have it, I gotta have Celebrex, huh? Celebrex, Celebrex. Over 20 million others apparently felt the same way and now have substantially increased their risk of heart attack. Celebrex, Celebrex, tested on animals. Celebrex, Celebrex, heart attack in a little pill. Celebrex, Aleve, Baycol, all tested on animals, all deadly to the human animal, but all very profitable to the pharmaceutical empire. Well, I'd rather live vegan. You know, what are you trust the FDA to protect you? It's why it's a wing of the pharmaceutical industry itself. It's the drug pusher. It's a rubber stamp. You know, like the Democrats are to the Republicans, like the USDA is to the meat industry. And gosh, I don't know if you noticed the Washington Post this past Tuesday. It says that meat plants are still violating the ban to protect us from mad cow. But you trust the USDA, you eat that steak, you eat that burger. The Washington Post said, meat plants are allowing brains and spinal cords from older cattle to enter the food supply, violating strict government regulations aimed at preventing the spread of mad cow disease. A federal meat inspectors union said this week, nearly a year after the first U.S. case of mad cow disease, meat plants have yet to implement measures required by the Agriculture Department to protect consumers, said the National Joint Council of Food Inspection. It says here the union's chairman said, we are seeing little to no change at these plants. So expect to be protected by the FDA, the USDA. I don't know. Anyway, the idea is to go vegan. We have a very interesting show planned for you today. I'm going to cover a lot of material from a book called Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism and the World's Religions, Essays, Conversations, Recipes. It comes to us from Rin Berry. Rin has been a guest on our show. He's a noted historian and has painstakingly traced the roots of many of the world's great religions to vegetarianism. And, well, today being Christmas Sunday, I believe we'll spend some time on the life of Jesus and vegetarianism. I think you'll find that quite interesting coming up on the show. Also, what can animals teach us about spirituality? Later in the hour, we will talk to Diana Guerrero, who has written a book about that very subject. And again, that's later in the hour. And as we come to the close of another year and you're making your tax-deductible donations, I do ask that you consider sending a generous check to Go Vegan Radio. This is where you hear information like nowhere else. After you hear what I have for you from Food for the Gods today, you'll say, gosh, this is a very special program that the animals have, a very special program geared for the animals and human life, the environment. And today, associated with the world's great religions. Where will you hear this? Nowhere else on commercial radio. This is the planet's first and only commercial vegan radio show. Coming up on our fourth anniversary at the end of January, we will celebrate with an interview with Ingrid Newkirk, the founder and president of PETA, who was also the first guest on the show 4 years ago. And we have to pay for the airtime each and every week. And have you been listening for 4 years or 4 weeks? Have you made a donation? Have you made a contribution? I was speaking to somebody this week who said, gosh, I can only send $50, so, you know, why bother? Well, if everybody bothered with just $50, this show would be well into the black. We'd be able to expand into other cities and onto satellite and get back on the internet where it needs to be. But it's all a matter of money, unfortunately. And I need to ask you to be generous, write a check to Go Vegan and send it to P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California. That's one word, N-E-W-H-A-L-L, Newhall, California, 91322. If the word vegan is new to you and you can't figure out how to spell it on the check, it's Go, V-E-G-A-N. Go Vegan is a project of 501c3 International Humanities Center, a public charity, and you receive an acknowledgement for your IRS records. So I encourage you to do that. You can email me at meatfreeamerica@yahoo.com, meatfreeamerica@yahoo.com, and you can call me at 818-623-6477. So coming up, it's Food for the Gods, and a little later in the hour, we talk to Diana Guerrero about what animals can teach us about spirituality. Today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Sitting on a pillow, waiting for night to fall. Girl in a dream, sitting on a pillow. This is the night to go to the celebrity ball. Satin and lace, is a little pity. Didn't find time. I'm always talking about how delicious Vegenaise is. No vegan kitchen should be without it. It dresses up even the simplest foods, like my favorite sandwich, avocado, tomato, and Vegenaise. Or is it mashed up chickpeas, celery, onions, and Vegenaise? Or a tofu burger with Vegenaise? Well, I do know I love it on baked or steamed yams. Well, you think you'd read about Vegenaise in a cookbook, it winning the American Tasting Institute Award? So I was surprised to see Vegenaise in a book about stroke prevention. Yet there it is, page 194, in Stroke Free for Life by David Weber's MD, Chair, Cerebrovascular Diseases, and Director, Stroke Research Center, Mayo Clinic. And who would know better about a Mayo alternative? Try Vegenaise, now in organic. Available at Follow Your Heart, Canoga Park, California, and natural food stores everywhere. As we listen to stroke prevention there, page 194 of the book, Stroke Free for Life. Interesting that Vegenaise is mentioned by name in that book. And this year at the stroke of midnight when the new year comes in, we will be missing Dick Clark for the first time, who will not be hosting the Rockin' New Year's Eve because he had a stroke. The lessons are go vegan. I am having a great holiday season because I got the present that I wanted, finally, from my good friend Vern at Earth Vegan Footwear. The box was under the tree. My new Aspens, which I'm really excited about. I am wearing them for the holiday season, to all the parties, to the New Year's Eve party. I'm going to have my new Earth Vegan Aspens on, the dressy shoe. I've been telling you that I had a pair of Navigators, which are more of the sandal variety, and they're the most comfortable shoes I have ever worn in my entire life. So look for me to be dancing up a storm at all the holiday parties. parties, New Year's Eve party coming up, because I will have my Aspens on, which means I will be enjoying Earth Vegan footwear with the Calso Negative Heel technology designed by Danish yoga master Anne Calso, promoting a natural way of walking. So natural, I feel like I'm walking barefoot in the sand. My head is straight, shoulders roll back, spine and pelvis align, breathing and balance improve, and toes spread out and relax, back pain disappears, all from these incredibly comfortable shoes that are all vegan, no leather, no animal products, no animal ingredients. That is certified by the UK Vegan Society. You can go to the website. You can see how fashionable these shoes are. The website is earthvegan.us, earthvegan.us. You can call 877-746-3364. You will find that these are the most comfortable shoes that you have ever worn. Also, you can go over to All Vegan. All Vegan has Earth Vegan in stock. All Vegan at 4669 Park Boulevard in University Heights in San Diego. You can stop by for all the necessities there. Vegan shoes and belts and wallets and purses and chocolate and lots more. New at All Vegan are vegan marshmallows. You also can find the Rose City chocolates packaged in All Vegan's private label, and the Queen Bee handbags, truckers and truckettes, the popular chick wallet, brown with pink chick, pink with red chick, blue with yellow chick, laminated pita posters, a new case of TUK black velvet Mary Jane style flats are only $20 a pair. At Earth Vegan, I'm sorry, at All Vegan, Earth Vegan, All Vegan, Earth Vegan, All Vegan. The Karma Style Earth Vegan is in black pleather at All Vegan. And you can also get organic and gelatin-free gummy feet and super sour gummy bears over there at All Vegan, which is open Thursday and Friday 2 to 8, Saturday 2 to 9, Sunday 1 to 6. You can go to allveganshopping.com.
M-E-A-T-S-T-I-N-K-S. Meat stinks.
And that it does. Well, Bucky is one lucky cat. He's alive today because a concerned person saw someone throw a suspicious-looking bag into a dumpster and decided to go investigate. You can read more about Bucky's close call, as well as the inspiring true stories of 11 other animals in People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals' 2005 Rescued Calendar. Each month features a gorgeous full-color portrait of a rescued animal, along with the animal's heartwarming story and helpful advice on how to save other animals. In addition to national holidays, the calendar also notes the dates of animal-related anniversaries and victories and celebrations. PETA's Rescued Calendar is an ideal way to remember your animal friends year-round, display one at home, one at work, and give one to a friend. To get your calendar, all you have to do is go to the website, petacatalog.org, petacatalog.org. Continue now. I want to spend some time with this wonderful book called Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism and the World's Religions. I've been spending a lot of time. It's really fascinating right from the beginning, and I think in the shows ahead, we may have to spend more time with this book. It's really interesting to trace vegetarianism and compassion back to Jainism, one of the oldest religions in the world. And I even like the dedication in the book there. It says, in India, feeding the gods is a special route by which humans feed each other. And that's how the book starts, and it does cover all of the world's religions in a very interesting way, and perhaps we've gotten lost in the shuffle on where our ethical behavior manifests itself. Well, today, let us spend some time with this fabulous book from Rin Berry. I certainly recommend it. Rin Berry is R-Y-N-N, and the last name is Berry, B-E-R-R-Y. And also a little later in the hour, we will talk to Diana Guerrero about her book, What Animals Can Teach Us About Spirituality, Inspiring Lessons from Wild and Tame Creatures. But right now, I'd like to go to a section in Food for the Gods. This section that we will cover today on Christmas Sunday is related to Roman Catholicism. And it's starts on page 191 of the book. And it says, the oldest form of Christianity extant is Roman Catholicism. It is hierarchically organized with the Pope as the head of the church and with cardinals and bishops ranked immediately below him. Tradition has it that the church was founded by one of Jesus' disciples, Saint Peter. Jesus, of course, is the central figure of Christianity. It is significant that Jesus was born, lived, and died as a practicing Jew. And his teachings resembled those quietist vegetarian sects of Judaism that were prevalent in the Jewish world during the destruction of the Second Temple in 70 CE. The Essenes, the Nazarenes, the Ebionites, and the Therapeutia. That Jesus may have preached the sort of ethical vegetarianism that one associates with the Indic religions, Buddha and Mahavira, is a tantalizing question that Christian vegetarians have long cogitated upon. And by the way, in advance, I should apologize for any butchering of the language that I do here, but that's the only thing I would butcher. I am vegan. So it says, and I'm quoting here, with these teachings, were these teachings suppressed by the church? Can they ever be recovered? The answer to both of these questions is yes. The church did suppress the true teachings of Jesus, and they are only now at the dawn of the new millennium. This book was written a couple of years ago. At the dawn of the new millennium, just coming to light. It really began with the discovery in 1945 of the Nag Hammadi Gospels near the Nile Delta in upper Egypt, large stone jars that had been buried for two millennia yielded up a whole library of lost gospels, such as the, let's see, Apocalypse of James, and a Gospel of Thomas, whose existence Orthodox Christianity and Judaism had consigned to oblivion by simply refusing to acknowledge that they had ever existed. How many other Gospels have been buried by the church under a blanket of silence? Was there an Gospel in which the canonical Gospels were based that was too radical, too revolutionary for the church to accept? Through the work of the Jewish religious historian Hans Joachim, I will say Schopes, as his last name, and he himself was a non-vegetarian, and others, the original Gospels of Christianity have been painfully restored. Called by Schopes the Jewish Christian Gospels, they have been partially reconstructed from scraps and fragments in the works of other writers, such as the, Panarion of Epaphanus and the Clementine Homilies. Again, excuse me for any butchering that I do here. The extraordinary thing about the Gospels is that they depict a vegetarian Christ. Professor Ron Cameron notes in his book, The Other Gospels, that both Jesus and John the Baptist were presented by the Ebionite Gospels as vegetarians. He writes, quote, their gospel makes both John the Baptist and Jesus vegetarians. John's diet is said to consist exclusively of wild honey, and Jesus is made to say that at the Passover meal with his disciples, he does not desire to eat meat. The vegetarian sect of which Jesus was a leader, the Nazarenes, who were later to become the Ebionites, were, in the words of Professor Shopes, dogmatic vegetarians. They based their vegetarianism on the injunction in Genesis 9:3 not to eat flesh with the life blood therein. Since the ritual incision doesn't completely drain the blood from slaughtered animals, they realized that it was impossible to eat flesh without at the same time ingesting blood. So Jesus and his followers practiced a strict vegetarianism that Shopes says extended to fish. Like the Egyptian therapeutae and the Essenes, the Ebionites and Nazarenes were an anti-sacrificial sect that practiced vegetarianism because the eating of flesh was a concomitant of animal sacrifice. As Professor Morton Smith observes, quote, in the ancient world, religious observances were attached to most acts of everyday life. Any festivity or misfortune was an occasion of sacrifice, and the meat of most sacrifices was used for food. No less a church father than Clement of Alexandria bears him out when he said, sacrifices were invented by men to be a pretext for eating flesh. Some modern writers have questioned the relevance of ancient animal sacrifice to present-day vegetarianism, but if flesh eating grows out of animal sacrifice, as Porphyry believed, then it is of the utmost relevance. When people eat animal flesh, even today, they are unwitting participants in an ancient blood ritual, for it was the ancient blood sacrifice that endowed the act of eating what is essentially carrion or dead flesh with sacral value. Today, people may think they are eating meat for its protein, for its amino acids, but it is really manna, or the God itself, that they are taking in when they eat the flesh of animals. Ernest Renan, in his biography of Jesus, which was the first modern biography to treat Jesus as a man rather than as a god, was the first modern authority to declare that Jesus was an Essene. Opposed to the sacrifice of animals, he sought the abolition of sacrifices that had caused him so much disgust, and said that the worship that he had conceived for his father had nothing in common with scenes of butchery. Since then, there is mounting evidence to suggest that he may have belonged to the Nazarene, an anti-sacrificial vegetarian sect, of whom the Essenes were the forerunners. Both groups held many doctrines in common, such as ritual bathing, vegetarianism, the communal sharing of property, and their opposition to animal sacrifice. The Catholic bishop, Epiphanius of Constantia in Cyprus, himself of Jewish origin and an important authority on Jewish sects, also tells us that the Nazarenes differed from other Jews in that they did not sacrifice nor did they eat flesh. Eyewitness accounts of the practices of the Essenes have been left to us by Josephus. He was to the Jews of antiquity essentially what, was to the Greeks. In his Jewish antiquity, Josephus tells us that the Essenes, quote, lived the same kind of life that which Pythagoras introduced among the Greeks, which is to say that they were vegetarians. In antiquity, the word Pythagorean was a synonym for vegetarian. Josephus certainly knew whereof he spoke, because he actually became an Essene when he was an adolescent. He also tells us that the Essenes did not make sacrifices, and since, as we've seen, animal sacrifice was the chief source of animal flesh in the ancient world, This observation alone would suggest that they were vegetarians. This is confirmed by Philo Judea, who said that the Essenes did not sacrifice living creatures, but preferred to sanctify their minds. Josephus also noticed that the Essenes lived long lives on their vegetarian diet. Generally, they lived long lives. Most of them reach an age greater than 100 years, that I believe is because of their simple way of living and their strict morality. That was a quote there. After spending a few years in an Essene community, Josephus went on to live with an Essene anchorite, a man named Banus, who lived on raw fruit and vegetables for these 3 years, at least from the ages of 18 to 21. Josephus himself became a practicing raw foodist. As I had heard, there was a person. Let's see if I can get the light over here a little better on the book here. As I had heard that there was a person by the name of Banus who stayed in the desert, who got his cloth from trees, thus he refused fur, camel hair, and wool, and who took as food only what grew by itself, thus raw food, and who repeatedly bathed by day and night in cold water in order to sanctify life, I decided to try his system. Another quote there. The sect of which Jesus was the leader was called the Nazarene, and probably, as Shope suggests, from the Hebrew word Nazar, to keep, meaning that they kept the true spirit of Mosaic law. But because they were so absolute in expressing their criticism of the sacrificial cult, the Nazarenes fell afoul of the Orthodox Jewish community as well as the Roman state. After the Sadducaic high priest Ananus the Younger condemned Jesus' brother James to be stoned. James was a practicing vegetarian and the first Jewish Christian Nazarene pope. The Nazarenes fled Jerusalem in 63 CE and settled in Pella in the Transjordan. This region was home to a number of other anti-sacrificial vegetarian sects who practiced ritual baptism. The Nazarenes settled outside the cities in the wilderness because they regarded the wilderness as a state of grace. Anti-sacrificial prophets whom they admired, such as Jeremiah and Micah, as well as the Rechabites, an early anti-sacrificial group, also had taken to the wilderness in protest. After settling in the Transjordan, the Nazarenes, or Jewish Christians, started calling themselves the Ebionites, from the word ebio, which means poor, and refers to the voluntary poverty that the Judaic Christians took upon themselves, like the Jain poverty, and who, as active missionaries in the Near East from the time of the Indian Emperor Ashoka, may actually have influenced the Essenes, the Nazarenes, the Ebionites, and the other anti-sacrificial Jewish sects. With the Ebionites, it was an article of faith that the Torah had been tampered with. They believed that the Torah had been falsified with each recension, and that very little remained of the pure text. All the depictions of God in the Hebrew scriptures they believed to be false, because they show God as being anthropomorphic and anthropopathic, with all the sins and appetites that human flesh is heir to. Therefore, it is not God whom the Torah is portraying, but a human-formed monster who is fallible, cruel, vindictive, jealous, lives in a tent, thunders, and is hungry for sacrifices. The real god, as envisioned, by the Ebionites, was kindly and loving. The Ebionites also despised the kings, Solomon and David. Solomon, because he built the original temple, which was the seat of the sacrificial cult, and David, because he was an adulterer and a warrior. Missing from the Ebionite testimonies is any reference to Jesus as being a descendant to David, because David's being a warrior offended their pacifist sensibilities. They also deplored the priestly redactor's depiction of some of the more famous biblical characters in a less than flattering light, such as Adam as a fallen man, Noah as a drunkard, and Abraham as a polygamist. Just as scholars like Shopes have pieced together a lost Ebionite New Testament with a vegetarian Jesus at its center, the Ebionites had reconstructed a lost Torah that had originally been innocent of bloodletting and animal sacrifice. With a genial creator God at its center. Jesus, they believed, had come to restore true law and the original teachings of the Torah that had been suppressed by the sacrificial cult. Unlike the Gnostics, such as Marcion, who wanted to abolish the Hebrew scriptures as the work of an inferior demiurge, Yahweh, whose creation was evil, Jesus and the Ebionites wanted to fuse the Hebrew scriptures with the Christian scriptures and purge the Torah of its false excrescences. It is worth quoting Shopes directly at this point here. Rinberry says in his book, which I am quoting exactly, the Ebionites, Judaic Christians of the second and third centuries, have sharpened the Mosaic law considerably and made it more extreme with their principled vegetarianism, the command of poverty, and the community of goods, as well as their rigorous cathartic, eliminated as being false pericopes, which means verses, first the bloody animal sacrifices, then the institution of the Israeli kingship, then the false prophecies in scripture, those which had not occurred, and finally the anthropomorphic descriptions of God, which had been pushed in afterwards into the Torah of Moses. Their Judaic Christian hostility toward the cult of animal sacrifice clearly manifests their tendency to restore the original Torah, purged of false verses. Whether or not they actually created such a purged Torah or employed it in their congregations cannot be demonstrated from the available sources. Charles Vaclavic says that one of the great losses to humanity may have been Jesus' own revision of the Torah that had been purged of its false verses. In the ancient novel that is one of the richest sources of material about the Ebionites, The Recognition of Clement, St. Peter, the protagonist of this work, says that the Babylonian captivity of the Jews came about as a punishment for the Jews sacrificing and eating animals. Believing that the sacrificial cult had been instituted by Josiah's reforms and inserted into Mosaic law by Ezra, which falsified the Torah, Peter says that the Jewish Christians were expecting a Messiah who would reform the dietary laws of the Jews. Peter goes on to say that Jesus was sent to preach against the eating and the sacrifice of animals. He substituted the ritual of baptism for the sin offering or the scapegoat ritual. With the waters of baptism, Jesus would wash away the blood sacrificial animals in the temple. Sadly enough, Jewish Christianity's most revolutionary features were lost when the Apostle Paul colored up the doctrines of Jewish Christianity to make them palatable to the Gentiles. Opposition to the Apostle Paul was a common motif of these Jewish anti-sacrificial groups. Paul's perversion of Jesus' true teachings was held in particular abhorrence by the Ebionites. They detested Paul and regarded him as an impostor, an opportunist, and an interloper. The enemy was merely the mildest of the epithets that they flung at him. They called him a false apostle and apostle from Mosaic Law. They believed that he was involved in a plot to assassinate Jesus' brother James, the first pope of the Jewish Christian Church, and that Paul had invented the episode of his having met the risen Christ on the road to Damascus. The Ebionites believed that Paul had concocted this tall story in order to lend authority to his claim to being the 13th apostle. They especially castigated him for suppressing Jesus' anti-sacrificial and vegetarian teachings, teachings that were reminiscent of the Buddha's teachings of the first precept, which Jesus may have absorbed directly from the Buddha missionaries that were actively proselytizing in the Near East. Although the Gospels of the Jewish Christians and their religious literature were quashed by the Catholic Church, scholars believe that Jewish Christianity survived in Syria and in Arabia. Shopes has speculated that the Ebionites may have occupied all of Syria by the 3rd century CE, meaning that Syrian Christianity had its roots in the Jewish Christian church, of which Jesus' brother, James, a raw food vegetarian, who lived on seeds and fruit, and not Peter, was the first bishop or pope. Indeed, the ascetic aspects of Syrian Christianity that gave rise to the desert mysticism of Simeon Stylites and Saint Anthony the Great, who practiced a raw food vegetarianism, and that also gave rise to the ascetic beliefs of Arabia, of whom Muhammad may well have been a member, serve to remind us what Christianity might have been like had the Apostle Paul not distorted its message and had the church authorities not ruthlessly suppressed Jesus' true teachings, which were to restore the true Mosaic law and to annul the animal sacrifices performed at the Judean temple. Let me just continue on here with a few more paragraphs, because time flies when the subject matter is really interesting. And again, I am reading from Food for the Gods from Rynn Berry, R-Y-N-N, Berry, Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism, and the World's Religions. And we'll definitely need to spend more time with this in months ahead. According to theologian Carl Skinner, as an enemy of the sacrificial cult in Jerusalem, Jesus placed himself squarely in the Old Testament prophetic tradition of Jeremiah, Amos, Micah, Hosea, and Isaiah, who were vociferous in their denunciation of animal sacrifice in the temple. Scriver writes, "The fame of Israel's prophets derived from their revolt to settle accounts with the idea of sacrifice. Their revolutionary thought was God's demand is not sacrifice, but ethical behavior. In order to be fair, it should be noted that the protest against the bloody sacrifice was not a special achievement of the prophets only, but also of Mahavira, Buddha, Pythagoras, a long list of people here. Unhappily, Jesus paid for his anti-sacrificial views with his life. Perhaps it was because he wasn't content to prophesy and rail against the sacrificial cult from a safe distance that he actually went to the temple in person to set free the sacrificial animals. All four Gospels say that he drove the animals from the temple, and the Passover of the Jews drew near, so Jesus went to the temple. In the temple, he found people who were selling oxen, sheep, and pigeons, and the money changers sitting at their tables. And making a scourge out of rope, he drove them all with the sheep and the oxen out of the temple, and scattering the coins of the money changers, he overturned their tables. To the pigeon sellers, he said, quote, 'Take those pigeons away from here. Stop making my father's house into a meat market.'" That quoted Jesus. If the chronology If the chronology in the canonical Gospels is correct, then it was shortly after Jesus overturned the tables of the money changers in the temple and drove the sacrificial animals outdoors that he was condemned to death by the Judaic High Court. He had done the unthinkable. Jesus had profaned the temple in Jerusalem by interfering with the sacrifice of animals. It was a brazen act of defiance against Yahweh, who the sacrificers maintained actually lived in an inner sanctum of the temple in a compartment called the Holy of Holies, where Yahweh inhaled the smoke from the burnt offerings. It was for this act of defiance and desecration that Scriver and Shopes believe that Jesus was condemned to die, like one of the very sacrificial animals that he had liberated. So, what do we want? Animal liberation. When do we want it? Apparently 2,000 years ago. Let's see here. It says, well, I guess that that's as good a place to stop as any now to go through from Food for the Gods. Again, this book is from Rin Berry. I highly recommend you read it, and we will spend much more time with it in weeks ahead. So anyway, that is an interesting Christmas Day story from Food for the Gods. Let us quickly... I think I need to probably just go into spots. Maybe just go into go into spots here, and because we do want to talk to Diana Guerrero, and as you know, the time just flies when when we're on the air here. It's a 1 hour a week that we have Voice for the Animals and information that you won't hear anywhere else. Miramar Kitchen and Bath, 8454 Commerce Avenue, Suite B, San Diego. MiramarKitchenAndBath.com. It's out with the old now and in with the new as you remodel your kitchen and bath with style and with the quality customers come to expect from Miramar Kitchen and Bath. Stop by and say hi to owners Nicole and Martin Donnelly, two animal lovers themselves who remind you to spay and neuter your companion animals and adopt from shelters. Help reduce the dog and cat overpopulations and the killing of homeless and unwanted animals. Visit the website to learn more about their fine work and their love of animals. Again, the website is MiramarKitchenAndBath.com. MiramarKitchenAndBath.com.
A, B, C, D, E, colon. Eat that meat and you will die.
Well, if you're out looking for a set of wheels, you got to get around. The place you should go is Bear Auto in Vista, 1944 South Santa Fe Drive. Open 7 days a week. The phone number is 760-597-1600. Hundreds of recycled cars are available for you, boats and collector cars, too. You can look at the website, bearautosales.com, BEAR autosales.com, to see the inventory and for directions and information on in-house financing. Bear Auto also buys cars. They'll give you cash. It's no high pressure there except from the two rescued sales poodles, Chet and Lewis. Say hi to Gary. Good people over there at Bear Auto, 1944 South Santa Fe Drive in Vista, 760-597-1600.
Oh, no. Now you're going to give it to people. Animal burgers.
Yeah, but no, you don't get animal burgers over at Rancho's Natural Foods Market, 3918 30th Street, announcing that except for its raw wild honey, for which is in demand by some raw food advocates, some trace back to biblical times here, the entire Rancho's Natural Foods Market is now vegan. The deli with delicious entrees and soups, 100% vegan. Get your organic produce and bulk items there. Rancho's has an organic salad bar with raw dressings, a juice bar, organic wheatgrass juice, even organic salsa. Vegan pastries available too. Try the fantastic cakes and cookies from We Make It Vegan, and Rancho's Natural Foods Market welcomes all raw food enthusiasts with a wide selection at 3918 30th Street. And don't forget, right next door, Rancho's Cocina Mexican and Vegetarian Cuisine at 3910 30th Street, and two other locations, 1830 Sunset Cliffs Boulevard and 4705 Point Loma Avenue, each with close to 100 vegan menu options. Enchiladas? Try the avocado or eggplant or tofu and tempeh. Burritos? Try the lentil or the potato vegetable or the soy chorizo. Also, vegan tamales, fajitas, taquitos, and a lot more at Rancho's or Rancho's. Rancho's, the anglicized version. Rancho's, correctly. Three restaurant locations, 1830 Sunset Cliffs, 4705 Point Loma Avenue, and 3910 30th Street next to Rancho's Natural Foods Market. Okay, just before we go to Diana Guerrero here, I want to mention that there's a demonstration against the bloody fur trade today from 2:30 to 4:30 at the Glendale Galleria at the corner of Brand and Broadway. And if you're looking for something really exciting to do, the New Year's Eve Bash in San Diego to celebrate the 20th anniversary of San Diego Animal Advocates is for you this coming Friday, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. at the Sunrise Room, Town and Country Hotel, 500 Hotel Circle North in Mission Valley. And tickets, 25 in advance, 30 at the door. Phone 760-943-0330, 760-943-0330, or you can email info@animaladvocates.org. So we're partying this Friday night, the New Year's Eve bash, to celebrate 20 years of San Diego Animal Advocates and to celebrate the next 20 years on behalf of animals. And since SDAA was founded in 1984, the celebration is 80s style with 80s music and just a whole lot of fun. Vegan buffet, DJ and dancing, party favors, complimentary champagne at midnight, cash bar. So special room rates that night at Town and Country Hotel, $89 for the night. You want to call Town and Country? That is 619-291-7131. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, supported by advertising for vegan and cruelty-free products only, and your tax-deductible donation, which you can make payable to Go Vegan and send to P.O. Box 220025, Newhall, California, 91322. And also, if you're looking to help animals, there's a great way to do it. Let me just ask you to go to the website, Project Ace, projectace.net, for you to help animals, children, and environment. And as we continue on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, well, Diana Guerrero is a well-known writer and author and speaker and wild and domestic animal behaviorist. She's a proponent of humane animal training, and she offers seminars and teleseminars on animal behavior. And last year, her book was published, What Animals Can Teach Us About Spirituality, Inspiring Lessons from Wild and Tame Creatures. Her website is arkanimals.com, arkanimals.com, all one word. Welcome, Diana. How are you doing today?
Great. It's nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you with us today. So we have a little under 10 minutes left here today, but I wanted to ask you the question that I'm sure you can answer, if anybody can answer it. Well, what can animals teach us about spirituality?
I think it depends on what you're open to.
Mm-hmm.
And what I talk about a lot is that we don't really pay attention to the lessons that are brought to us every day by the animals in our lives, not only the domestic animals, but the animals in the environment.
And what sort of lessons are we learning? I know that, I think that you mentioned that, when you look into an animal's eyes, you know that there's somebody there.
Yes, most definitely.
And maybe a soul is there too.
Yeah, and I mentioned that. It's a controversial topic, you know, coming through your interview regarding the book Food for the Gods.
Yes.
Different religions have different viewpoints on whether or not animals have souls. And so as an afterword in my book, what I talked about was where some of those ideas came from. And interestingly enough, BeliefNet, which is an internet interfaith site, interviewed quite a few people, and 86% believe that animals have souls. Mm-hmm. And I think if you really pay attention, you can really see that divine spark in animals. I mean, it's everywhere, in my opinion. But animals teach us different things, and there's not just one thing they can teach us. In my work with animal behavior, oftentimes I go into a home or I work with people who are missing what the animal's bringing to their environment, to their homes. Dogs are most people, if you say dog, will say loyalty. But that's not the only thing they teach. Or cats will teach a multitude of things, like letting go of attachment to making someone do what you want.
That's for sure.
And so what I did was mix a lot of different stories that I've encountered throughout my lifetime with both wild and domestic animals, and just thrown out stories for people to look at on lessons that people have learned from their animals about personal and spiritual growth. So there's not just one kind of pat answer. It really depends on where you're at and where your animal's at, and if you really pay attention to what they bring to you.
Well, what would some of those examples be then?
Well, for instance, otter. I talk about playfulness of the otter. And in the book, what I've done is I've kind of taken my background as an animal behaviorist makes me look at the world through those types of eyes. I was at the Bodhi tree speaking one night, and there's this mythical connection that people want to have with animals. And this woman was sharing this story about how she connected with this peacock in the wild, and they made eye contact, and she really felt this strong connection. And as she passed this wild peacock, he attacked her. And I said, well, yeah, because he's a wild animal. And no matter what kind of connection you think you have, they're always going to be true to their nature.
Talk to Siegfried and Roy about that. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You have to. You know that when you're working with an animal, they're going to be true to their nature. You can learn from them, and you can take lessons symbolically through the ages. There's been a lot of different mythology. Aesop's fables is still very popular. The different stories from the Egyptian gods, or even if you go to Africa and look at the totemism, you know, people that look at the totems in the Native Americans, you see the symbolism of animals through almost every religion and every culture. And so it depends on how you've been raised and what your affinity is with the animals on the lessons that you're going to learn from them. So, for instance, in The Playfulness of the Otter, I talk a lot about how when you watch an otter, they teach you to be industrious and to work hard, to dive deep, to get to the bottom of things, to be persistent, to get what we need. And that's just looking at their normal behavior and watching what they can bring to the table. Oftentimes I encounter animals in the wild when I'm dealing with something, and I can look to that animal and see the symbolism of their appearance and their behavior and put it towards what is going on in my life at that moment.
Well, sure. I think that for a lot of people, animals are their connection to nature. That's life. It is spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Connection to animals and to the divine, I think both.
To the divine, yes, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I think because we've been so isolated, we're living in cities, we're living in suburbs, we're not as in touch with animals as we once were. That in many cases, there's a lot of kids who I live in the mountains, and they come to the mountains and they're amazed that there's insects, and they don't have any idea of the role that insects play in the natural order of things, that they're natural recyclers, or the squirrels and the bunnies. They get very excited because they never see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was a good point, though, because I think for me, animals are my connection to the divine. I think you've you just saved me years of psychotherapy or something.
Good. Good.
Well, we might have a couple of minutes left here, and there was something I wanted to bring up. I noticed that you're a proponent of humane training, so you oppose choker chains and collars like that, the spike collars and all. And there was a little controversy going on. We have a minute and a half here now, related to a program called Trading Spouses, which just ran. And my poor dear friend Barbara Gates is getting such grief from that show, and she did pat a dog on the rear end as part of the normal potty training. And I think everybody, every book you look at is, well, put the dog's nose in his excretion, and a little smack on the rear end. Is there a new?
That's an old method of training, and it's interesting because as we move forward, we forget the past. Like, humane training actually started in Germany in the 1800s. Now it's called clicker training or behavior modification. It's been around for ages, but it's only been rediscovered, really got popular in the mid-80s and in the dog world probably in the late 90s. But most of those methods come from wartime service dogs. And if trainers can use those tools effectively, but the most people like choke chains and spike collars, which I don't use, you can use them effectively if you're trained how to do it.
Diana,
but there's other ways to do it that take more time but are more humane. And
okay.
I put something up on the website for your listeners.
10 seconds left. It's arcanimals.com?
Right, and they can take a look. There's 10 different ways you can address house training instead of swatting them and sticking their nose in it.
Thank you. Thank you, Diana Guerrero. Go to arcanimals.com. Thank you for listening to Go Vegan. Go Vegan, and Happy New Year.